Hey, Andrew.
Yeah.
I have a story for you.
Okay.
A black mom and her black 5-year-old son are on a plane. Okay. They're waiting for it to take off. Her son points to a man and tells her, "That man looks like daddy." And so she looks at the man and notices he's black, like her son's dad. And he's also the only black man they've seen board the plane, but he looks nothing like her son's dad. So she makes a mental note to talk to him about how, you know, not all black people look alike, right? And but her son continues to track the man with his eyes, and he says something that really shocks her, which is he says, "I hope that man doesn't rob the plane." Yeah. And she says, "But you know, daddy wouldn't rob a plane. Why would you say that about this man?" And her 5-year-old says, "I don't know." So, Andrew, there's a myth that if your kid says something racist, then that means they must have racist parents.
I have definitely heard that, Melissa.
Yeah, but now I need to tell you that the black mom in this story is Jennifer Eberhart, and she's told this story publicly a number of times, right? So she's a MacArthur Genius Award winner. She's a preeminent researcher on racial bias at Stanford, and she's super attentive to giving her son healthy racial ideas.
So, given who she is, we would not expect her son to be saying that he thinks a black man is going to rob a plane.
Correct, but he did. It's fair to ask, where might this little boy have absorbed this idea about a black man robbing a plane, if not from his parents?
I am rubbing my chin right now, Melissa. Where indeed? Hi, I'm Andrew Grant Thomas. I'm a black man. I'm a co-founder of Embraced Race with my honey, Melissa, and I'm a dad to 2 kids.
I'm Melissa Giroux, a multiracial woman, black and white. I'm also a co-founder of Embraced Race and mom to those same 2 kids. You're listening to the Embraced Race podcast, a show about how to raise kids who are thoughtful, informed, and brave about race.
This season, we are looking at popular misconceptions about race and raising kids. On today's episode, we're tackling myth number 5, that kids who express racist ideas necessarily have racist parents or caregivers. And today, we're going to counter that myth by talking to Courtney Wong Chin about another place kids learn about race, in the media they watch and consume. Great to have you, Courtney.
Thanks for being here, Courtney.
Thank you so much for having me.
Courtney Wong Chin is Senior Director of Research at Nickelodeon's interactive learning platform called Noggin.
At Noggin, Courtney oversees user experience research, content research, and learning impact evaluation. She helped create BigHeartWorld.org, which is a resource hub of videos, songs, activities, and guidance to help adults support kids' healthy social and emotional learning, very much including developing healthy attitudes and identities around race.
And Courtney and her colleagues create characters for Big Heart World, they're called Big Heart Kids, that are meant to be authentic portrayals of racially, ethnically, and otherwise diverse kids. And that's why she's here. Previously, Courtney served as Director of Content Research and Evaluation at Sesame Workshop. Courtney, can you start by telling us a bit about your personal connection to the work you do?
I was a child who grew up watching a lot of TV and without seeing many people who look like me. So, in fact, my brother and I would play a game like Spot the Asian, where anytime we saw an Asian on screen, we just call out Asian. We'd like, you'd have to like point and go Asian. And we kind of joked about it, but you know, we were gamifying our disappointment. We were gamifying our sadness.
How old were you and your brother when you were doing that?
We were young, because I remember doing that while watching like Barney. So early elementary school. Maybe I was like 6 or 7.
So it was definitely on your radar.
Yeah, because I'm Chinese. Most of the Asian folks I saw on screen were just kind of nerdy or awkward or weak or Chinese takeout restaurant workers who were angrily yelling in this toddler level English, or simply in the background with no spoken lines. In contrast, most of the other folks I saw on TV were white, and they were strong, beautiful, brave, funny protagonists of the story, and that shaped how I see and value myself. And this shapes how I felt out of place, and like I haven't belonged, and like I'm only my worst and most uncomfortable traits, or unworthy of having a voice, and unlikely to be that strong, beautiful, brave, like funny protagonist of my own story.
And Courtney, I'm wondering, you and your brother, right, share this observation and sort of made this game of it. I wonder, did you talk to your parents or sort of older generation aunts, uncles about what you were seeing and what that felt like?
No, I didn't. We grew up in a very, in other ways, emotionally open and healthy family. Like, it was very important to talk about our emotions and talk about when we were angry and, you know, work through conflict together. But this was something that we kind of just accepted and really didn't think to question it. And it was sort of like, this is just how it is. This is just like my lot in life.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that experience.
Yeah. I just want to shape media that helps children see and believe that they belong in the world they're entering. And that sense of belonging really sustains us and helps us thrive. And it shows us we matter.
So, Courtney, when you were growing up, you saw only a few images of Asian Americans on TV. And the ones you saw, those few, weren't really representations you grooved with, right? That you identified with. So pulling back from the specifics of your situation, can you tell us what we actually know about whether and how media shapes the way kids think about and understand race?
If we look at the academic research on how media shapes children's understanding of race, it is limited. What we do know is that from infancy on, everything kids see and hear helps build their understanding of the world, including people and race. So I'd like to borrow an analogy that's used in education with curriculum and stories, that stories can be windows or mirrors to educate students about the experiences of others and themselves. And similarly, media can be a window to expand a child's world with someone else's lived experience. And media can also be a mirror to reflect back our own identities, showing us that we belong. But, you know, we ask ourselves, like, what information has media provided kids through the windows and mirrors? And for me, I ask myself, like, what racial, ethnic groups are kids seeing in media? How are they seeing these groups portrayed? And who are they not seeing? So last year, the Gina Davis Institute released a really comprehensive report on inclusion and representation, and they found the majority of characters in children's programming are white.
Courtney is talking about the 2023 Gina Davis Institute study of on-screen representation in children's media here. In the study, when they looked at English language programming for 2 to 11-year-olds, they found that about 6 in 10 characters were identifiably white, even though the majority of U.S. kids that age are kids of color. On the other hand, programs introduced in the last couple of years have had many more characters of color than in previous years. But that representation was uneven. So at a time when 26% of U.S. kids are Latine, only 10% of the characters in popular English-only television programming were Latine. Multiracial kids are also super underrepresented, as are disabled kids of color. So basically, we've made good progress, but still have a way to go. Let's get back to Courtney.
So while there certainly has been an increase in BIPOC characters over the past several years, this suggests that representation of individual BIPOC groups is still quite limited. And when representation is limited in what kids see in the media they consume, we risk reducing people to stereotypes. So much of the academic research around race and media effects focuses on how BIPOC folks are negatively affected by these stereotypes, the stereotypical portrayals of their groups. So particularly for Black, Latinx, and Native American children. I would say a lot of the studies focus on older children and teens, but some for younger as well, really showing that the more they see these stereotypical representations, the lower their self-esteem and confidence. And that resonates with me. That's very much how I felt growing up with these mostly stereotypical and very limited Asian representation on TV.
Courtney, I'd like to pick up on something you began to speak to a few minutes ago, which is this idea that representation is about way more than numbers. So when people look at children's media or at any media, really, including media for adults, we tend to think of diversity and representation pretty narrowly, right? So we talk about how many people of color are there, how many women, how many characters with a visible disability, who are the heroes, the villains, the sidekicks. But in a short essay that you wrote for us just a few months ago, you said something really interesting, which is we need to ask more of the representations that we see, right? You said we need to aim for cultural specificity. We need to ask whether the characters we see have particular histories, whether they're believable, right? Whether we could imagine them being real. So I wonder if you could say just a little bit more about that, in part because it seems to me that there's real guidance embedded in that about the kinds of stories, the kinds of representations in film, in TV, in media in general that parents should be looking out for so we can help our kids see positive reflections of themselves and other people and communities.
Right, yeah. So in certain ways, as a researcher, I can appreciate that when you're telling stories or when you're trying to change minds, numbers are helpful. So we end up reducing things to a checkbox of, okay, how many have BIPOC characters or, you know, Asian characters or Black characters or Native American characters? And it becomes this thing that you just tally because we need some power in that, but then we lose the, well, how are they represented? And I think that kids' media is doing a really great job of having it be beyond an inclusion or represent, like having one of them, one of every color on screen, if I may say that so boldly. I think part of what I see them doing really well is having this broader range of representation in terms of race and ethnic groups. So for example, Asian representation tends to focus on East Asian. So when you hear Asian, there tends to be a focus and a visioning of East Asian culture, like Chinese, Japanese, Korean. But to have something like the host of Blue's Clues is Josh De La Cruz. He's a Filipino-American, and he's part of this Asian group that's kind of been erased from this East Asian imagery or narrative. And there's also like a wide variety of the types of narratives and details that are included. So, for example, Molly of Denali, great show on PBS about an Alaska Native girl. And there are some entire narratives that are shaped around culture and history, even touching on the Native boarding schools where children were forcibly removed from their homes and forced into these westernized schools, not allowed to play their instruments, speak their language, all of that. And like that show went there and like touched on that in a really bold way. But having the breadth of that and having kids who, you know, across shows, you can have this mix of like these culturally specific elements and just general kid traits that we're mixing in and saying like, and you can be both. You can have the small details of like, I like using chopsticks to eat dim sum. And I can also use chopsticks to eat spaghetti if I want to, or hot dogs, or dare I try pizza? That's a little bit too daring. That would be a little bit too crazy. But but I think you get what I'm saying. Like when we are going really, really deep and saying, these are the values of my family, of my culture. These are the things that really make my story unique from the stories that I've seen. But there is beauty to also mixing with, for me, I'm Chinese American. I know not everyone is American in this country, but for me, it was really important to be like, okay, I'm Chinese American. I can do both. Like, please don't question me when I'm eating with chopsticks. Please don't question me when I'm eating with a fork. And I love seeing that in our shows as well. So for Noggin, we have these characters called the Big Heart Kids, and they are characters who are featured in all of our social and emotional learning content. And initially, we actually had much like thinner profiles for them where, you know, the characters' race or ethnicity, their age, and like some of their hobbies. But we went back and realized like, hey, this is worth investing in a full profile to architect. Why would we make the decisions around Catherine that we would make? So
Catherine, one of your Big Heart Kids characters.
Right. We just knew that she was Chinese initially. We didn't know anything else about her background. So we went back to architect these full profiles to say like, okay, Catherine, her family's from Hong Kong. So that means she's going to speak Cantonese. She's not going to speak Mandarin, which I love because At home, I speak very, very little Cantonese, but I speak some Cantonese, and I identify with that far more than Mandarin. But Mandarin's the primary Chinese language that people know and will quote. And if I tell people I'm Chinese, they will say things to me in Mandarin, whether or not they themselves are in fact Chinese. So for me, it made me feel really seen. And we said, okay, well, what about her family? Her grandparents, they came here from Hong Kong. She lives in San Francisco now. And so they're actually still around. They came when her parents were younger. So we have this whole familial connection, and we have a sense of how much Cantonese is she going to speak. And that depends generationally. And it takes the time and intention to say, hey, it's worth actually figuring this out so that we can make really intentional choices and not just check boxes of things that you Google that Chinese people may or may not do. So that's the work that I'm really proud of for being at Noggin. I'm really proud of finding Chinese families to sit down with and say, here is Catherine and her family. Here are all the things that she does. And Catherine is this mix of loving hot pot dinners with her mom and dad and aunt and grandparents. And she also just really loves to dance and play football and be crazy and to counter these sort of weak stereotypes around Asian women. She also very specifically loves standing up for her friends. So if she's on the playground and someone's picking on one of her friends, she will stand up for them. A little baby Courtney energy in there.
Yeah, I love it. Courtney, I want to pull back for a minute. You know, you're clearly motivated to put characters on the screen that represent kids who haven't seen themselves validated that way before. You know, so they see themselves, so kids unlike them see them as well. And it's clear that there are pockets of people working on this outside of Noggin too, and you've named some of those shows. You also said that children's media in general is doing a good job at better representation. But I'm wondering how that squares with, you know, recent studies like the Gina Davis Institute study you referred to that, you know, when you get into the details, paint a bit of a different picture. One where some groups really are still severely underrepresented racially in media, in children's media, and where there are still, you know, according to parents surveyed, problematic representations of people of color. So I'm wondering how you square those two things, the improvement and, you know, the persistent problems.
I mean, across content, like way beyond children's content, we're paying a lot more attention to race, to BIPOC creators. And once you have folks who are on staff and creating the content and being able to really speak to their own experience, there is more of that, a boom, and I would say the authenticity of the content and the heart to really wanting to get breadth and depth on these stories and just having more of it. What children's media is doing well is the different ways that we are approaching this. So, for example, having explicit description and celebration of differences and similarities in ways that may not have been before. Like when I was a kid, if there was an Asian kid on screen, we're not talking about the major differences between Asian kids and white kids. But for example, Sesame Street, there's episodes calling out skin color, talking specifically about melanin. What is melanin? Well, if you have more of it, your skin is darker. Comparing skin tones and in a way that is much more explicitly saying it's okay to talk about the things that make us the same and different. We are not blind to these differences. We see and celebrate them. So the quality of how we are representing and exploring these similarities and differences, I would say that's where I'm seeing that win. Also, BIPOC folks in very positive and counter-stereotypical roles. So for example, on Noggin, we have a show called Noggin Knows. And our host is Emmanuel Carter, and he is a Black man. And as a host, he's sort of playing the teacher role in a preschool classroom. So how powerful and unfortunately uncommon it is to see a Black man in this classroom setting leading young children and that space to have such an incredible role model. And then what we had sort of discussed before about the depth of the types of narratives and the little details and that could be having a word or two in another language. That could be taking off my shoes before I enter the house, like many Asian households might do, or it could be in the kind of decor that you have. So for Catherine, her family is Buddhist. So you might find a Buddha statue near water and with some flowers around it in her home, or a rice cooker in the kitchen. So there are those types of things that there is also power in just having a lot of those and not needing to explain them.
Right. So who's it for?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that's a mirror moment for a child, right? Where it's okay if it goes over another kid's head, but I love that a child can sit there and say, that's my home.
I love that. Mm-hmm. It's important.
So how do you think about how much television specifically, but media in general, your son should be exposed to? I'm thinking about you're having said that you watched a lot of television as a little girl, but you also joined the business because clearly you thought it could do some good work, right? So maybe there, you know, we should be distinguishing between television that's more helpful or less helpful. But at any rate, how do you think about that?
So while, of course, I believe in the health benefits of not looking at a screen 24/7, I do like to think of it more on what you're mentioning for the latter, the quality and the breadth of content that they engage with rather than the amount. And I do that primarily because I don't want to shame parents. I think that screen time can be really beneficial, and I think that there are really valid reasons why parents will give their children more screen time. For me, it's a way to make sure my son is sitting safely while I cook dinner, or my husband might do that while he's cooking dinner if, you know, only one of us is home with him. And we see that as really a really safe way for him to spend his time and watching quality programming. The things that, like, I ask myself are, can I watch this with my child, and can I talk to him about it during or after? So for example, like Daniel Tiger is very big in our household, and it is a great one because even if I'm not watching every second with him, there's so much that I hear. They have these really great jingles of different phrases that help with various transitions, or things like, it's almost time to go, so choose one more thing to do. And I'm like, this works.
Nice voice, Courtney.
Thank you. when bath time or anything is over, I know to use that jingle. And I just start the first half of it, and my son immediately holds up one finger. And he's like, one thing. And I'm like, that's right. You pick one thing, and then we got to get out of the bathtub. So nice. I use that as an example because we know there's so much more that children can learn when adults in their lives can extend the learning off of the screen. So if it's something that, like, frankly, isn't, like, annoying for me to hear over and over and over again, and it's fun and it's helping us grow together as a family, that's one of the main things that I look for as quality content. I also ask myself, like, does this content model behavior or attitudes that I want my child to have? Does my child see himself? Like, is this a mirror for him? Or does he see those who are different? Is this a window for him? Because I want him to have both. And how are they being portrayed? Is it positively? Is it negatively? And if it's negatively, is it something that we can talk about it? My son is two, so there's not a whole lot of meaningful conversing that we're doing other than using these great little ditties to help my child transition. But that's how I see that, like, extending into older children as well. Other ways that I think about this are, like, are we watching content that's made by creators of color? As I mentioned earlier, just knowing there's a whole different lived experience. I know that we have a lens when we create, so I want my child to be exposed to various lenses. The other thing is a variety of content. Like, I know that no single video or series will have everything. He will have things that look super, super educational, and maybe it's all animated characters, so there really isn't any reference to, like, a humanoid skin color or hair or anything like that. But, well, he'll watch a mix of that and live action as well, because I want him to see real people and real animals and nature. And I think that the variety is key. And I am thinking, you know, a little bit more on the younger end, because that's my specialty within preschool, and that's how old my child is. But I think that as your child gets so bigger, and you can have some of these conversations around, like, what are you seeing? Are you seeing yourself? Like, who are you seeing there? And, like, how do you think they're portrayed? I want content that can help create those conversation moments as well.
So your child is two, mm-hmm. and you're paying attention to everything that he's taking in. Certainly, he's got the right parent to be looking over children's media and knowing what to pick there. Being very aware of the...
Yeah, no pressure, Melissa. Yeah. It's like, you'll be a perfect child.
No pressure. But Courtney, I think that parents with slightly older kids than two through, you know, high school might think about this a little bit differently, right? We think a lot about how we can prepare our kids for the world as opposed to protecting them from it. And when they're really little, we get to choose a lot of their media, right? And so we get to kind of stack the deck so that they're getting those windows, they're getting those mirrors, right? And they're learning a lot and they feel empowered culturally and in other ways, right? As they get older, you know, there's a lot that creeps in that sometimes all of it that we don't have control over. And so we really need to give them the tools again to look at media and its messages critically. And I'm wondering, you know, how you think about doing this as your child gets older.
Yeah. It's like, how do we build this critical media literacy in kids? And, you know, to me, that means really, how do I encourage Anthem to like ask questions in a way that helps him understand that what he's seeing is a slice of someone's perspective? And I want him to be able to recognize that like what he sees on screen is not necessarily 100% reality. And I want him to feel empowered to like really filter the rest of what he's watching or doing with an appropriate lens, or decide to turn it off or stop reading or watching or whatever. In broad strokes, like thinking about this for older kids, I think about how do I encourage them to ask questions like, who is making this? Like, who is making this thing that I'm watching or reading? Like, is it adults? Is it kids? Are they adults or kids who look like me, or are they different from me in some way? And then like, why did they make it? So were they being silly? Were they being serious? Were they trying to like persuade me to do something or to believe something? And then the question of who is being represented and who is not being represented and who is being not represented well? And then how might someone of a different background react to watching this or playing this content? Because with media, also just like a different experience once you talk about video games and just like how stronger those connections can be when you're interacting and like immersed in a world. Those are the kinds of questions that I would want to encourage my older child to ask and to engage with and to really step back and to be able to make decisions for himself about what he wants to take from this rather than kind of passively just receiving everything as truth.
So, you know, so often in our work, certainly, right, as Embrace Race, working with caregivers and caregivers to children of all ages, right, we certainly talk about the need to ideally build a scaffolding that you start building early, right, so that each step ideally builds on work that you've done before.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, and it's an absolutely genuine question, I wonder if with Anthem, the kind of media literacy and the kind of, you know, you refer to questions you would ask when he's older, but would you say that there are ways in which you have begun that already, that you're setting the stage for those questions? And what does that look like if the answer is yes?
Yes. That's a great question. And that is my specialty, even outside of my son really focusing in on preschoolers. So there are these foundational skills leveling up to those deeper questions that I just mentioned. And they really are about pausing to ask, like, what do I notice? Who are the characters? Are any of them like me? How are they like me? How are they different from me? Like, do I want to be friends with them? Why or why not? Those are sort of the simpler ways, still quite a little bit above my two-year-olds, but definitely in the preschool realm of questions, because it's really about encouraging them to notice and talk about, again, these similarities and differences. Those are the developmentally appropriate building blocks to discussing race. And that's part of actually what we outline in our Discussing Race with Young Children guide. We used various pictures of different scenes and even real photos of families to use question prompts and ask them, like, what are you noticing? Like, maybe there these two kids are playing over here and one has like these really beautiful braids. And like, what do you think? What do you notice that's the same or different about them? And like, can they still be friends? Oh yeah, they're friends, they're playing together. And so there are ways that in the same way we have these picture prompt, these questions that go along with picture prompts, but you can very much do that with media as well. I would say the difference with younger kids is like, there's a lot of power in being able to do it like in like right after they watch or like in the moment if you can sort of engage. Because sometimes my son does just kind of want to hang out and like have it on the screen. And he loves it when I'm engaged with him watching. So sometimes he actually really loves kind of pausing and like showing me, and we're like, oh, what's the same? What's different? And we'll run up to the screen and point to it. So I definitely want to normalize that. And for parents of young kids, I think really we're not assigning a negative value to anything. We can really just notice and say like, that's beautiful. That's just what that is. They are, here are all the ways these two kids are different. Here are all the ways they same, and they're playing together, period.
Yeah. You know, I love that. And I also love what you said about that this was created. You know, I love the idea also when our kids were pretty young, they were allowed to use iPads to make things, to make movies, mm-hmm. as opposed to watching. And mm-hmm. I think just that idea, there's so much potential in, you know, fan fiction or in creating your own stuff that stars you, you know,
yeah.
To think about how story is made, how it's created, mm-hmm. what's the purpose, what do you mm-hmm. want from your audience, you know, what are the different things that can be manipulated? I mean, those lessons can be taught in different ways pretty early.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. I love all this advice.
And I think, too, that we, you know, shouldn't understate the importance of just modeling, right? Just modeling, asking questions.
Yeah.
You know, we mm-hmm. start, those of us who are parents who have been in the lives of small children, we know that we start engaging them and talking with them as soon as they're out of the womb, literally mm-hmm. before they're, right, while they're still in the womb, mm-hmm. knowing mm-hmm. that they're not literally understanding what we're saying. And still we do that, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of questions that you described asking of preschoolers, it seems to me, would be really great to ask with your 2-year-old and 1-year-old, not because he understands yet exactly what you mean, but you are modeling,
yeah.
right, asking questions, not only of him, but of the text, the book, mm-hmm. the pictures,
right,
the movie,
right.
whatever. And that will become a normal part of interacting with any
yeah.
of these media as he grows up. That's lovely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And there's so much you can even ask about, like, even getting at empathy, which I love being able to do, like, from that sort of practice of saying, like, look at how they're feeling. Like, look at what they're doing. Where are we? Like, we're in a doctor's office. Mm-hmm. What does their face look like? Mm-hmm. What do you think they're feeling? Mm-hmm. And even that is a building block to start noticing and really, like, wanting to help and wanting to comfort. And, like, my 2-year-old is doing that before he could talk. He would notice when we are sad or, like, when we were, like, yelling or shouting, and he would, like, come over and just kind of hug. And, like, now he just says, big hug, and he comes mm. over. And to your point, it's, like, the ways that we train, you can train them to notice, and you can train them to just respond in really empathic ways. And or I hate using the word train. He's not a dog, but, you know, it is the modeling, and he's excited to do the things that we do and say the things that mm. we say.
Well, he sounds like a lovely little boy.
Oh, thank you. He is.
Courtney, thank you so much. This has been a fantastic conversation.
This has been awesome.
Yeah, we're so appreciative.
Oh, this was so fun. All of the self-reflection as I even just prepared for this chat, it was very humbling to think about, like, oh, why do I do this work, and what does keep me going? So thank you for posing thoughtful questions that gave me space to really think about my purpose and just be grateful for where I am.
Melissa, a lot of people really do think that kids who spout at least arguably racist ideas must have learned those ideas from their parents. It's just not true. So for sure, as a rule, parents play a huge role. We talk about that all the time mm-hmm. in shaping how their kids think about race. But parents' influence in that respect is often really indirect, and they're certainly far from their kids' only source of information about race.
Yep. And, you know, as we've been talking with Courtney about, media is one important source of racial messaging for kids. And really, the often subtle messages kids take in about race from the media and from other places may help explain why parents like Jennifer Eberhardt, whose story we shared at the top of the show, can be surprised by the stuff that comes out of their kids' mouths.
Absolutely. You know, I really appreciated hearing about Courtney's experience looking for Asian Americans on television when she was a kid, but now helping to change those representations as an adult. Things have definitely gotten better since we were kids and since Courtney was a kid. But, you know, I'm wondering if our listeners may not be experiencing a little disconnect, because on one hand, yes, these representations, diverse representations are much better now, but their experience as parents looking for really diverse characters in children's media, you know, ones that aren't animals, that aren't trains, can be really frustrating. And certainly we've had that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, there is greater representation, right, of diverse families and kids in more recent years in children's media, and there's more in development. Same with children's books, right? The ones that were published more recently in 2022, 2023 are much more diverse than the ones published even 6 or 7 years ago. But the thing is that those older books and shows and movies still take up a ton of oxygen in terms of what kids are actually watching, seeing, and reading. Right? And you think about box office hits like Harry Potter or Percy Jackson or the Frozen movies, white, and a huge influence.
So that's a really big, important point, right? So I'm thinking about when we go to the kids section in our local public library, and you look at those books, and a lot of those books came out when publishers were paying way less attention to diversity than they do now. So no question, we need to keep banging that diversity drum. And we need to keep pushing to diversify the creative teams that produce kids' content. So that's another really key front. It's not just about having more people of color writing the show scripts and getting behind the camera. We need more Black and Brown and multiracial and Asian American and Native people who themselves have a wide range of backgrounds. Right, because we need people who can tell a wide range of realistic stories about Black people, you know, about Latine people, about Indigenous peoples. That is the only way that eventually all our kids will have a chance to see something of themselves in the books they read on the television screens that they're watching.
Unless we also encourage and support kids to create their own media, right? And their own drawings and their own fan fiction. I think fan fiction is just creating your own is a great strategy for helping kids tell other stories from different points of view, right? You might ask, how would the story be different if you were Hermione, you know, or if your brother was Hermione? That helps them understand that, you know, all stories are created, they're constructed by the person or people telling them. And always when watching media with our kids or reading books, we have to ask them lots of questions as they're consuming it. We have lots of resources about this at embraceface.org to help you have these conversations.
Indeed we do, Melissa. And there's a lot more to be said. And in fact, people, our next episode is one where we're going to talk about how and what kids learn about race from the social structures they see around them. So, what do we mean by social structures? Check out the next episode to find out. For links and resources related to today's show from Embrace Race and elsewhere, you can check out our show notes. The Embrace Race podcast is hosted by me, Andrew Grant Thomas.
And by me, Melissa Giroux. Our senior producer is John Asante. Our editor is Megan Tan.
Our engineer and sound designer is Enrico Benjamin. And our consulting producer is Graham Griffith.
Special thanks to Team Embrace Race, Robin Deutsch Edwards, Andrea Huang, Tamara Montes de Oca, Christina Rosinski, and Mariam Zahid.
Mad love and respect to our people, and a big shout out to our two kids who helped inspire this work and to the entire Embrace Race community.
Subscribe, rate, and review our show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. That really helps us.
And for more resources related to today's show and other topics about race and kids, please do visit us at embraceRace.org.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.